For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. You're with Brian McClain on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, what's up? Okay, so thank you again, John Matlin, for hanging with me last hour. That was a fun conversation. And remember, Hesher Matlin, for president in 2024, we will fix this shit. All right, that's our campaign platform. That's our bumper sticker. We'll give you a true platform there with actual action items, but our bumper sticker slogan will be, we will fix this SH, you know what. All right, yeah, and thanks Holly and Maz and everybody for being in that live chat over there. John and I were in the chat over there as well, trying to be better about minding the chats while I'm broadcasting, but man, I am so thankful I have Alex there pushing the faders and the buttons because, man, Cece and my guest, Pat Jordan, they can see my eyeballs just like scanning like 180 degrees of monitors here with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 applications up in front of me at once as we do this stuff. But I love it. That's the thing we do here. All right, let's check in on Twitter. Let's check in on Twitter via libs of TikTok. So Elon Musk tweeted out, by the way, and this is nice, you know, this is nice CEO stuff to do, you know, King Twit, whatever his name is these days on Twitter. He says, by the way, I'd like to apologize for Twitter being super slow in many countries. The app is doing more than 1,000 poorly batched RPCs just to render a home timeline. Okay, cool. Little tech nerd speak there. We don't know what that means, but we think we know what it means. Anyways, it's nice, you know, just kind of just put that statement out there as the owner, own up to it. And then one of his employees at Saatchi here tweets back to Elon, his boss. Can you imagine this? Oh my gosh, tweets back. Could you tweet back to your boss this? You did not just lay off almost all of infra and then make some sassy remark about how we do batching. You don't get to shit on our infra if you don't know what the F it does while you're also scrambling to rehire folks you laid off. All right. That was how it all started, and here's how it's going. Saatchi then tweets out, LOL, just got fired for shitposting. I said it before, and I'll say it again. Kiss my ass, Elon. All right. Well, learn to code. Learn to code there, Saatchi, as they say on Twitter, as you guys banned a bunch of people for saying on Twitter. Wow. Elon is cleaning house. No more shit posting from Twitter employees. How about that? At least if they want to keep their job. I think that is the lesson here that Saatchi McCaw just found out. Well, well, well. All right. Thanks, Elon, for that. Elon Musk is the Donald Trump of social media. I got to say, you know, Donald Trump came along and it was like he was the Donald Trump of politics. We all know what the Trump effect was. And, you know, ironically, that all promulgated and mostly went down on Twitter. So now Elon Musk owns it and he's like a bull in a china shop. He's got a great sense of humor. I'm digging it, you know, Elon. I'm not down with your Neuralink though. I'm not down with your Teslas and your Neuralink and all that other stuff. So let's not focus on the transhumanism garbage. We'll give you the Mars stuff. All right. If you want to prove to us that, space isn't fake and you know what, then, yeah, get some HD cameras up there, blow on through that Van Allen pelt belt or whatever it is. Show us how this works. Get us some real moon footage that's not made by the guy that made 2001 A Space Odyssey, all right? I want to see some real footage. So we'll support you in that. If you drop the Neuralink, I don't want a robot sewing electrodes into my brain so that I can generate more cryptocurrency for the federal government after they take over our financial systems and bring us the new Globo dollar, which will be CBDC. Potentially coming in the wake of all this FTX stuff. And if that sound like alphabet soup to you, you're welcome. You're welcome, that you don't have to know about these things, but you should learn about them. Okay. Well, you know what? Let's take a sweeper here, Alex. If you missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all the major podcast platforms, you know, the ones, iHeart, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon, Google, Apple. See, I read those out of order. It's getting more fun to read these things out of order. Now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT Radio.
Going beyond the headlines.
They break down the big story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
TheCurrentReport.com is where you find my co-host, Cece Woods. Welcome to the show. Happy Friday. How you doing?
Good morning, Hesher. What a morning. It's been a little cuckoo.
It has.
But you guys got through it.
But we're dynamic. We are dynamic. We are,
well, yes,
what
you are.
One of my colleagues used to say, Semper Gumby. We are Semper Gumby over here. Always, always flexible.
And we brought the chief on last minute because we've got breaking news with this mass casualty event with the LASD recruits that happened a few days ago. And I think the chief and I are going to be at odds on what just happened because we discussed this morning. Yeah, no, it'll be fun. But, you know, I'm going to let Pat say hi here in a minute. But here's what I'm going to say about the whole situation in general and my feeling. First of all, I am a huge.
Wait, hold on. Hold up one second. Hold up one second there. Before you go to your feeling on it, can I have just the facts, just the update? Like, how many people are injured? How many people are dead? What's the statement? I mean, I don't mean to cut your order off of operations.
No, it's fine.
CC,
no. There's.
I want to get
no
those facts out first.
I gotcha. Okay. First of all, the suspect was released from custody. To me, that's a big no-no. To Pat, not so much. Okay. There's no fatalities. Thank God. Limbs are missing on some of these, patients, these, victims. So there's, I think, five in critical, missing some limbs. I believe one of the victims, and then the rest are either moderate and minor injuries. But there's a lot of chatter going on in lots of different places about what is happening. And the chief and I did talk about that this morning. So I find it very highly, highly, highly suspicious that this person was released, but the chief does not, which is why we're going to have some back and forth here this morning. Good morning, Chief, by the way.
All right. Well, Chief Pat Jordan, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I was waiting for the fireworks to come my direction. So far, it's been pretty mild. But I'll be glad to deconstruct this for you. Let's just get to it. So this guy was charged with attempted murder. I think it was yesterday or day before yesterday.
Yes.
And then he was released. So let me walk through what the process would have been had he stayed in custody. You know, when you're arrested for a felony, they have to arraign you within 48 hours. And basically, they have to show that, you know, there's a likelihood that a crime occurred and you're probably responsible. And then within 10 days after that, they have what they call they'll do a bail hearing. But 10 days later, they'll do what they call a preliminary hearing, where they get into a little more depth about what happened and the likelihood that you actually committed the crime, right? So those are the legal hurdles that if you make the arrest, you have to be able to achieve those things, right? So at first, everybody was talking about this as an accident. And I'm going to go through theories. And let me clarify for everybody here. I'm spitballing based upon 38 years of experience, being a former detective myself, running two detective bureaus as a lieutenant. I'm talking based upon theory and what's out in the paper. I have no inside baseball. I haven't talked to anybody on the department. I just know the process and what I know and what I think might be happening, right? So this isn't, don't hold me to this and say, he said this, so we need to charge him. So the first, you know, the first theory is obviously it's an accident. So, and let's clarify what people, you know, there's a civil process and a criminal process. And you can't look at the video and not come to the conclusion that the driver is responsible, at least civilly, right? He's driving down the road. He has an obligation to drive safely for whatever hazards are in front of him. You know, he's got 75 recruits in front of him. That means he doesn't drive into them, right? Which the video shows he actually did. So he is responsible civilly. Now, the question is, does criminal liability attach in this case? And so when you're looking for, and what you need to do to get criminal liability is you need to have intent, right? Did he intend on doing that? And that's where the challenge is for these guys. So, right. So basically they have the circumstances that happened that day is what it appears to me. They have 75 potential witnesses on the streets, and some of the deputies were in radio cars that they're getting testimony from afterwards. And what I suspect is some people probably saw the guy looking in their direction. That's what I suspect. And based upon the video and this guy looking in their direction and keeping his foot on the accelerator, you can imply intent based upon those facts. Now, you want more intent than that, right? You want to, does he have a history of social media, anti-police social media? Did he have a bad morning that morning and say something negative to his girlfriend? I mean, what happened that caused him that might have contributed to his thinking where this was intent? So basically, you're taking your witness statements and you jump to the conclusion this is attempted murder, you make the arrest, right? And keep in mind that you had a couple different agencies that are working on this. The CHP started it out because they handle traffic accidents within unincorporated areas. And then once it switched to civil liabilities, it's the sheriff's department does that. So you have a changeover of investigators as well, and maybe a different philosophy in how these things are handled, right? So our homicide bureau, who would likely have this, because I think that they would bump it up to a more experienced investigative group like them. They're one of the best in the country. I mean, they're right up there with NYPD, LAPD, because I know, unfortunately, we have a lot of homicides. So the more homicides you have, the more experience you get, right? So they're some of the best in the country. And so they're looking at these timelines thinking, okay, all I got is witness statements. So what do they want? They want a lot more concrete intent implied, right? So they want to look at social media posts. They want to get search warrants for his phone, his computer. They want to talk to family and friends and find out what's going on. Was he depressed? Was he anti-police? Was he getting online with these other leftists and saying hateful things? That would buttress any intent that they saw in his actions that day. So if he's looking at him, driving towards him and accelerating, and he's got these anti-police comments, then that really shores up your intent. So they don't have all that and they want to get that. And the best way to do that is to delay the arraignment, delay the preliminary hearing, get the search warrants done, get the paperwork done, get the witness statements done, and decide where they're at. And there's a third possibility here, and this one is also just as likely as the previous two. So there was marijuana found in the car, but he was not found to have been under the influence of alcohol. However, you can be under the influence of a narcotic. Since there's marijuana in the car, since we have, you know, anybody can smoke a bowl in the morning now, it's in their house, it's all legal. But once you get in that car, if you're still under the influence and that impairs your driving, then there is an implied intent based upon your behavior. If you cause serious injury and death, that would be vehicular manslaughter. Since nobody's died in this case, it would be a felony DUI, right? So you have all of these things you're looking at. And that one, you would need toxicology to come back on that one so that you could see if they have any marijuana in the system. You want to talk about, you know, did he smoke a bowl every morning when he got up? I mean, what happened? And so those are all, so they want to go down all of these paths to make sure that they're getting it right. And, but I think the original arrest, just looking at the video and maybe even some witness statements, that's probably where the original belief that a tent did exist came from, which is why they made the arrest. And cooler heads are prevailing and say, let's slow this down and let's shore up our intent because we don't want to file and not win. We want to file and win if it's true that he actually intended to hurt these guys. And you also have a DA who, you know, you want to have it wrapped tight because he's looking for every reason to not file cases, in my opinion. So I, you know, I don't like to, I would think that if the evidence exists that Gascon would move ahead with this too, but you know, I'm suspicious of the guy, right? So, but those are the kind of the three situations or the three scenarios that I see based on my experience and spitballing that the department is dealing with in handling the case.
Pressure.
Interesting.
Would you like to chime in?
Well, it occurs to me that this, forgive my speculation, but it occurs to me that this, to me, feels like a organic event that is having its media handled in a way that is fair and correct, and an investigation clearly happening where the time is and professional subject matter experts are working on it, agencies are working together to figure out where it lies in those options that you just laid out there. They're not poisoning the public with political intent or anything like that right off the bat. And to me, it's an amazing illustration, you know, to speak with a professional like you on a case like this that we literally saw break during the show live, and then did immediate analysis on, and then next day analysis on, and the next day there really wasn't anything new, and today, you know, we're getting some updates on the status of the people that were victimized by this, and then we talked to you and you're outlining how this is probably working in the background. That was not the case with the Paul Pelosi thing. It's just like Paul Pelosi is like immediately we have this super politicized event happen right on a timeline before midterm events, elections, and the story is wild and the suspect is wild and the motive is absolutely wild and contradictory. Just all this weird stuff, and then the story changed, and then the story changed again, and then someone told another story, and then some of that badge cam footage actually came out, and now it's really quiet. So it just goes to show, folks, for whatever reason, you have to fill in the blanks your own on this one, but a highly politicized story functions like that, and something that actually happened, this being, you know, run by the proper people, is going to probably look more like this particular case that we're talking about here, which we'll get back into, and I'll take you guys' comments on that after a quick break with today's news talk.
TNT Radio's George Eliason.
Ukraine has been rolling into Kherson. And just as I predicted yesterday, they're claiming a big victory. Russia has pulled out of Kherson and they've moved to the other side of the river. Kiev is announcing on the news, before they allow people to come back into the city, they have to check a dam that's upstream to make sure it's safe. Well, that dam is under Ukrainian control. And quite frankly, if Kiev is worried about that dam, it means only a couple of things. One, either they set explosives to it and they were going to blow it, or two, they have things set up so it's going to trip a major flood. And that's why the Russian army evacuated as much of the city as would go.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Globalist agendas. Democratic rights at risk. Corruption. Propaganda. It never stops.
for the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations. Vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. I love the George Eliason show. I always learn something new when I get to tune in to George's show. Right there during the break, he was talking about why the Russians pulled back from Kherson there. I hadn't heard anybody talk about that yet. So, see, I'm always learning stuff over here at TNT. So many great shows going on over here. So you definitely want to stay tuned because we are 24/7 over here. You got Scott Wheeler with Through the Looking Glass, Steve Malzberg. Mike Ryan's show is amazing. It's right in that time of night when I start to fade out, but I've been catching at least the first hour of his show. It's great. It's got some great comedy and some hard-hitting news. Love the Mike Ryan show. So many great shows. Jorge Morick's show, big shout-out. Yeah, definitely. John Matlin's show. You heard John earlier on the show. Lynn Shaw, Patrick Henningsen, Joe Hoft, I mean, Greg Mayberry. Geez, we got so many great people. Michael Parker, Timothy Shea, Rick Munn, McBride and Brennan, Charles Noves, Jeremy Nell, one of my favorites over there, Germ Warfare, Mark Morano, Joseph Arthur, big shout out to Joseph and Ruckus. Got the Sky Dragon Slaying Show, Trish Wood. Oh my gosh, Digging Deeper with Dee Dee Denslow, George Eliason, Malcolm Roberts, Jesse Zerwell, who I believe is coming up next. Owen Stevens has a new show over here. You heard him on my show recently. Big fan of Owen Stevens, Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. I mean, are there enough? Is 24 hours a day enough to host all these great voices? Well, yes, we pack it in somehow over here. All right, I'm with CeCe Woods and Chief Patrick Jordan. We're talking about this event that happened out there, this tragic event. CeCe, what do you think? Do you want to chime in there? Do you got any more fighting words the Chief here? Anything?
Yes.
Got any conspiracy theories?
Let me go back to the beginning. Yes,
speculation. All right. Let's see what
I
you
can't
got,
believe
CeCe.
I'm becoming this girl, but I'm just so deep into this specific rabbit hole. And by rabbit hole, I mean LASD. Okay. That's my rabbit hole. That's where I go. Okay. Like I was going to say in the beginning, I absolutely adore the Chief, have nothing but the utmost respect for him. I call him, even if the wind is shifting direction, I will call the Chief. Okay. Like that's how good of colleagues we are. Okay. So that being said, I also have a tremendous respect for law enforcement in general. We could not function in this society and feel safe without them. And I know many, many amazing cops out there, and both men and women, and I give them nothing but the utmost respect and kudos to them for putting their lives on the line every day. That being said, talking to my sources within the department, okay, that are fairly high up in the ranks, they're crying foul play in terms of how this process is shaking out. Let's just put it that way. They're very surprised at the suspect being released and for the reasons that they are stating. Well, he was released on an 849B1, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, which means that he was detained and then released, correct, Chief?
Yeah, you use that charge when you detain somebody or release them.
Right.
With, you know, you just release them without charges. That's
right,
all.
Right, right. So multiple people who called me and they're like, this stinks. Something's not right. So there have been rumors that this kid is part of a law enforcement family. From what we're hearing is the uncle. This particular source inside the department, this higher ranking source, basically said if this was an African American male, they would have kept him behind bars. And this is coming from inside the department, mind you. Okay, this is not a BLMer who's contacting me. And they're basically saying that some shenanigans are taking place. Now, that's not to say, and also the way Alex, our sheriff, has been speaking about the case, a lot of people are questioning what's coming out of his mouth, too. And this may be, they are alluding to the fact that there may be a few things that are being covered up, pushed aside in favor of this kid because of who he is tied to. And there are also threads in Diamond Bar where this kid is from, that he is from an affluent family that is also, again, tied in with law enforcement. So there's a lot of these different variables that are floating around right now that are not, they're throwing up some cautious, you know, red flags. So, so that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing, and also I'm hearing that the person who signed off on this is part of Alex's inner circle, one of his henchmen. I know who he is. I know who, anyway, you know, Pat, our listeners may not know the in-depth doo-doo that we know about. So, but that's what's starting to shake out in this case. So it's, yes, the press is reporting on it correctly. They're not throwing shade or doing their uber liberal BS, which is fantastic, but there's still something going on. And our sheriff-elect Luna is having a press conference today at 11 a.m. I wish I could be there in person, but it's just by the time I get off the show and get on the freeway, there's no way I'll make it there, but I will watch it live. That's it for me.
Well, let me first address Hesher's comment about the Pelosi thing, because I really want to jump in on that. And, you know, I was talking about criminal deadlines and timelines, and that's what was governing, is governing this case. You know, CC may disagree with me there. What was governing the Pelosi's case was the deadline of the midterms. And let's not let anybody forget that. You know, they politicized that because they hoped to gain some headwind going into an election where they weren't looking so good. And maybe they did. Who knows? But and the interference or the disruption of a competent investigation, a competent investigation was disrupted because of the political necessity for the Democrats, period. You know, and suggesting with the conflicting information that he was a Green Party man running around doing nudist stuff, you know, smoking bowls, taking drugs, but hey, he's really a right winger. I mean, the conflicts were many, and the behavior of the Democratic Party was outrageous. They've demonstrated over and over again that no lie is too big for them to tell. I'm really happy the Republicans are taking over the House. Now we can find out what really was on Hunter Biden's laptop. And so that was the other deadline. So there was the legal process, criminal legal process, and the political process of the Pelosi case. In this one, you know, there may be some political influence going on. I mean, Diamond Bar was one of my cities when I was the chief, right? It is a wealthy suburban community. When I heard he was from Diamond Bar, I thought, okay, this is probably upper middle class guy. He, based on his name, you know, he looks to be a Latino. So I think the comment that CC's making, well, if he was somebody else, he'd be treated differently because that's the way the sheriff rolls. I don't know that's the case. All I know is if I'm running a detective bureau and I got a high profile case, I'm going to want to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. And I'll give you an analogy, right? I was running the detective bureau at West Hollywood, and we had a very high profile gay bashing. It was the Trev Brody case. All over the national news. It was on, you know, that, who's that, John, what's his name, the guy, America's Most Wanted. It was on that twice. You know, when you're handling a case like that, all you do is you get thousands of tips in that are useless. And I had half my detective bureau was dealing with useless tips, and the other guys were focused strictly on the evidence that was coming in and the good tips that were coming in. And we had that solved within a couple hours. But the profile, it was so high profile because it was national that they expected a lot more out of the prosecution than we could deliver, right? So they wanted a hate crime charge on it. And I did everything I could on my end. We bugged the cars that they were in. We interviewed all of them. We got admissions from one that they were targeting gay men because they felt they were weaker, which is good enough if you have two people say it. But we only had one conspirator say it. It was enough for us to charge. So I got my detective off the hook. We charged the hate crime and moved on. But the DA said no, he needed two conspirators to say that. Because if you have three people arrested and one of your conspirators said, you know, he's not really a credible witness by himself. That's why they need two. And everybody was marching up and down the streets because they didn't get the charge they wanted. So the evidence really didn't support it when you go to court. So the DA didn't file it, right? But for me, I made sure we dotted all of our I's and crossed all of our T's before I took my step forward, because it was so high profile. Because you don't want to charge and lose. You want to charge and win. You want to get them for the right charge. You don't want to blow it just for political expediency, unless of course you're the Pelosi's. But for me, I want, and we got all those guys went to federal prison, I mean state prison, and for a very long time because of the good work by deputy sheriffs both at West Hollywood, and it was our transit service police that caught those guys. So it was all a sheriff's department gig, and it was great. So in terms of whether there's political interference from the sheriff and others, I can tell you this: if I'm running the detective bureau, I'm okay with it slowing down, because I'm going to put a case together to lock the guy down if it's there.
I'm sorry, I got to jump in here because I'm going to challenge you on this one. Okay. And it's not the one case that I believe they didn't dot the I's, cross the T's. I know there's multiple cases, but that was politically motivated, get it done, make it go away, was the Malibu Creek State Park shootings. That was a big screw up. And it was taken right out of homicide's hands, and it was put in major crimes. And there's all kinds of stuff surrounding that case. And the sheriff is the one that was pulling the puppet strings because he wanted to win the election. He wanted that case gone and over with 3 weeks before the election. And I have plenty on that one that I haven't released yet.
Well, let's clarify on the Matrice one that started under Sheriff Baca.
Right. I'm talking about McDonald's. Malibu Creek State Park shootings. I'm talking about Anthony Rauta, not Matrice. Matrice, yes, that was under Baca. But Malibu Creek State Park shootings with Anthony Rauta, I have it all. I haven't released it yet, but I have it all. And I'm telling you, even mainstream media was calling me, telling me on the down low all kinds of things about homicide screwing up the investigation. And I mean, originally Lost Hills, then homicide screwing up the investigation, then it gets put into major crimes. And now we have this miracle arrest 3 weeks before, and the guy still hasn't been to trial. It's 4 years later, more than 4 years later.
Well, let's get back to the recruits.
You and I are going to spar on this one, Chief. Okay.
There's a lot of guys that are seriously injured.
You're too quiet.
Their life has changed. And here's the deal. Those guys in homicide, these old grizzled homicide veterans, you know, got the case. They're going to want to make sure justice is done. And if justice means this kid actually committed a crime, they're going to want to make that happen. No sheriff on his way out is going to stop any of that. I have a hard time believing that Villanueva would also be engaged in any kind of cover up or any kind of special treatment on this case. I know, as I sure as hell went, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who the family is. I'm just going to say it's going to have to rise and fall on the evidence, unlike the Democrats and the Pelosi's. It's going to rise and fall on the evidence, and that's the way it's going to be. And as somebody who runs a detective bureau, I'm okay with it slowing down because I can gather that information. I'm less pressed for time. And so as a cop, I'm like, okay, slow it down. Besides, we're going to have a new boss in a couple months. And I'm confident that this will be investigated properly. And let's keep in mind what I said in my very first comment. He is responsible, whether it's a civil responsibility or criminal, he is responsible no matter what. There's all that drama from these left-wing tweeters and twits, whatever out there that, you know, about, oh, this is, it's the cops' fault because they were jogging in the street. It's this and that. It's this, he is at fault, period. That's it. And so he'll be held civilly liable for sure. And I believe, based on what I saw, there's a strong possibility of criminal liability as well.
Yeah, interesting. And unlike Canadian BLM Q conspiracy guy David DePap, this guy sounds like he might at least get a, if he does end up in a criminal trial, he'll at least get a jury that's not been immediately skull plugged into what to think about it. You know, that's actually a smart move too, that could play a factor there, I would imagine, if what CeCe's saying is correct and this guy is from a, you know, an affluent family or a law enforcement connected family, they would definitely not want to, you know, poison the public towards that and then jeopardize any, you know, fair and appropriate civil or criminal case against him.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I keep in mind, I mean, he sounds like he has a strong family around him. They're going to do whatever they can to make sure that, they're going to protect him as much as possible. How far they go with that, I don't know. How much treasure they spend to protect him, I don't know. I mean, they're, no matter what's going to happen with these guys, is they're going to have lawyers in their lives for a long time, right? And but let's we are talking about him, and but let's keep in mind there's a lot of recruits out there who are seriously injured. I'm hearing amputations, and so these are life altering things. Some of these guys will never be deputy sheriffs now. They won't be police officers because they won't be capable of doing that anymore. So their dreams are long gone because this guy ran into them with his car, whether it's civil or criminal. The results of what he did were evident on the film and the serious injuries that he caused.
Yeah, man, I saw the a picture of the vehicle afterward, and my God, I was just horrified. It's like I hope he ran into a pole or something, because if those were all people that made the front of his car look like that, is just an absolute horror. I mean, I can't even imagine.
I saw that car too, and I thought the same thing. Did human bodies? But if you think about it, those guys were running in formation, so it was like they were. He would have been coming, even though they're bodies, he's coming up to a very strong, you know, line of weight. Right. So,
yep.
Yeah, just is, it's pretty sad, but I think things are going to unfold fairly quickly here in my estimation. I mean, it's all there. The evidence is pretty much right there in front of you. You've got video camera footage, security camera footage, you've got witnesses, you've got the recruits themselves. I mean, there's a lot there. There is a lot there for law enforcement to go on. However, I am very concerned about the goings on right now. And like I said, this is not me making this up in my head. This is information that's coming from inside the department. They're calling me, telling me their concerns, which is why I called the chief this morning. And of course, the chief, being the good cop that he is, knowing a bunch of great cops who do amazing work in homicide and throughout the department, of course, he's going to have the logical explanation as to why these things are going on. And then you got me over here who goes down my own LASD rabbit hole when I get my phone calls. So we're kind of just trying to weigh all the information and make, you know, some real determinations. Based on what we have right in front of us.
Right. So, Chief, what do you think about what can we expect next with regards to when we're going to get a motive or personal information about this guy? And I mean, they're not going to be able to hold that stuff back too long, even though this story doesn't seem to be as large in the media as other ones, when arguably maybe it should be. What can we expect as far as, like, considering things are seem to be going at the proper pace right now, to your estimation? When will we hear more?
Well, there's probably two big things. They're serving search warrants, I'm sure, on his social media accounts, his computers, his phone, and to see if there's any anti-police bias on that stuff, which would lend to consent, intent on his part. They're going to try and talk to some witnesses about him to see what his frame of mind was, I would imagine. You know, is he depressed? Is that going on? I think the big one I would really be looking out for is the toxicology report, which will take a while. I don't remember how long those take, at least 3 or 4 weeks. And how much did he have any narcotics on board at the time that could have influenced his driving? Because you know what? Even if that was only, you know, impaired him just a portion, the fact that he was impaired and driving and all these people were injured brings up the felony DUI, and if any of these guys pass away, the vehicular manslaughter, right? So those are the things I would be looking for. And the one I'm really most focused on is the toxicology thing, right? If that comes up that he's got marijuana in the car, it's legal now. And this could be a case study in where we're going as it relates to legalized marijuana in our country, you know? Because if you look, you know, and I've read a lot of the advocacy research regarding marijuana and stuff, and they'll say, no, it doesn't do this and it doesn't do that. And then you actually read the medical associations and those folks, and they're like, you know, it really isn't the cure for everything. It really isn't this and it really isn't that. And as you recall, Biden wants to make it a Schedule II drug. Remember that? He asked for that a little while ago. There's actually a benefit to that, because what they're saying is there is a medical use for it. And then for it to be medically used, it has to go through the FDA and all this stuff gets studied, right? What does it actually really do for you? And it isn't just, you know, the old wives' tale. Yeah, it helps with my trick knee, you know, the kink in my neck, it helps there, you know, I'm a little depressed, it'll help me there, you know. So now you get down to what it really is. And then you start seeing the long-term use of it and abuse of it. What does it actually cause? Because, you know, years ago, I read about marijuana as I was a young cop, because drugs was the key to getting in people's pockets if you wanted to find stolen credit cards and other stuff, right? You looked if somebody's under the influence, then you can look for the source of their intoxication, that kind of thing. And so I read up on marijuana, and it's an interesting drug because it stays in your fatty tissues for a long time. So if you're a chronic user, it could actually have it stay in your blood system for a long time and be released under stress and other things. So I really want to see the toxicology report. I want to see if that was a big driving, I don't want to say driving factor, but if that was a factor in this case, then I would want to know that. That's probably the big thing I want to look at, because I have a feeling that's where it's going to go.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, if that's what they're going to go with, I'm going to be a little surprised. It seems to me much more likely that was done with intent for some reason than guy got too high. And like you said, it's in your system for a long time. So I don't know how they could say, like, you know, he smoked too much marijuana that particular day. You know, isn't it just sort of like it's there or it's not? I mean, I'm sure there's some degree to it, but it seems like that would be hard to argue as a defense for himself or against him in a court. But I honestly don't know. I would just be a little surprised. I mean, most stoners, they don't hit the gas when they see things going wrong or when they're, you know what I mean? Like that's when you catch people going below the speed limit, not increasing. But I see what you're saying. And who knows, you know, all of the street drugs now. I was telling people the other day, I gave an impromptu PSA. I said, get off drugs, everybody, because especially, you know, because all this fentanyl is now mixed in with many of the street drugs. So you get yourself some Ambien or some Adderall mm-hmm. from some weird Instagram account. You know, they say that 100% of the counterfeit drugs now, 100% of the drugs that people are getting on social media, these weird social media accounts where they use emoji language to buy and sell drugs, pharmaceutical drugs. And the studies are saying that 100% of those drugs are not made by pharmaceutical companies, meaning that they are counterfeit, black market drugs. And now you have no idea how much fentanyl or if any fentanyl is in those things. So, you know, kids are ordering stuff on Instagram like they need a sleeping pill so they can be well rested for you know, a final or whatever, or they need some Adderall so they can stay up and study for it. At least that's what they think, because that's what the media skull plugs into them is, hey, this is, they show adults on Netflix shows doing this. They show them to, oh, I got a big meeting tomorrow, I'm going to do some Adderall. And then they're sitting there drinking cocktails. They actually present that as what culture like should be on television, on Netflix, on like 90% of the shows. And then these kids, they figure out, young people, all ages figure out how to get these drugs off Instagram. And yeah, shame on you, Meta, by the way, for letting this happen. And then some of them die because it's got fentanyl in it. So, you know, just common like, oh, I'm going to use this for that and this for that, because that's what they do on this stupid show I saw on Netflix, or that's what all my friends are doing. You know, dead. It's just not worth it anymore, folks. You can't like take drugs, especially powdered and pill form drugs, and know that, you know, there's not fentanyl or something screwy going on in there and that your life is in danger. It's just not like it was just 10 years ago. Go ahead, Cece.
No, yeah, sorry. So last week, literally right before one of our shows, my girlfriend texts me a flyer. Her daughter went missing. And Sherry and I jumped on it. She said, Cece, can you post this on all your platforms? I'm like, oh, my God. So I called her. I'm like, what the hell? Well, it turns out her 15-year-old daughter met somebody on TikTok. And this guy picked her up, basically abducted her. And pretty much abducted her and took her to Torrance. And she was gone for, I don't know, 48 hours, almost 48 hours. And she was found in the street. She had been on meth. This guy was feeding her meth. And 15-year-old girl from a freaking great family who connected with this guy on freaking TikTok. And thank God we jumped into action. I posted it. Sherry picked it up, put it on Nextdoor. And somebody from Nextdoor found her on Hawthorne Boulevard in Torrance wandering. Okay. So, I mean, that is a best case scenario, that they found her and that she was alive. But this yeah. social media stuff, it's like, wow, you know, it's yeah. so dangerous.
So let me hit all those points, you know, because you guys all brought up a lot of good points. So first of all, the marijuana use impacts your cognitive thinking. So if you're driving and you have to take a reactive measure because there's a threat in front of you, that's where it really becomes problematic, because now you have to. So did he have the wherewithal to think, I got to hit the brake versus the gas? You know, that's where the impaired thinking for marijuana and some of these other drugs coming on. To hit on your other point, yeah, yes. I mean, the DEA has a one pill can kill program or theme out there saying that a lot of the stuff that's coming in as Percocet, it's fentanyl and things like that you're buying online. That's a scary thought. And even our marijuana is all gray market stuff. It's being grown by the cartel, sold here. You have no idea what they're using on this stuff, what you know, insecticides and whatnot are being used, and you're ingesting that stuff. It's a scary thought. It's interesting. There was an article just a couple of days ago. So, oh my God, smoking marijuana might actually be bad for your health over the long term. It was in the LA Times. I'm like, you know. Where were you 3 years ago? And now they're finally starting to talk about it. But the most important issue that you guys just brought up was the grooming of children online, and they look for kids online. They look for kids who are looking for attention. The situation Cece just talked about, that's what that sounds like to me. They get them addicted to drugs and they push them into prostitution. Now this is a game that is as old as time. When I was first working the streets, you know, they were teenage boys and teenage girls who are prostituting themselves out for their pimps. They find them at a bus stop or the Greyhound station and make friends with them, come be my friend, get them addicted to drugs, and then they're turning tricks for the next few years until they're rescued. Thankfully, your friend's daughter was rescued fairly quickly, but that's what's going on. And so here's the public service announcements for the parents out there. Monitor your kids. The cell phone use, monitor their internet access, inspect it. You can say, hey, this is what the agreement I had with my kids. And of course, we didn't have cell phones at the time, but we did have computers. It says, I have a right to go on that computer anytime I want. And at the time, it was much more adept at computers. So I knew how to shut off rights and do all that other stuff. That was all Stone Age stuff now for me. But and I said, and here's the deal. You shut up that computer when I walk in the room. You give me the password so I can see what's going on or else, right? And so you set rules and boundaries for your kids on these phones. No password, you know, just like, hey, when I knock on your door, you might have a lock on your door, but when I say open it, you open it, right? It's just like that with your kids. So if I say, I want to see what's on your phone, there's no privacy for a teenager. You know, you either take the damn thing off, the password off, or you lose the phone. There's no privacy when you're on the computer. You either give me access or you lose it. And then you do regular inspections. You tell them, I'm going to do regular inspections on this stuff. And I think I already told the story about what I told my kids about drugs. I'm going to check you every day you come home, and I'm going to check your friends. And of course, they were mortified that I was going to check their friends. But you know, you have to be nosy with your kids. You only really get one shot to raise these guys. And I would rather be successful in raising them and not fail and pick up pieces for the rest of their life. And you set boundaries. And I wouldn't say. I doubt if you asked my kids, well, was your dad your best friend when you were growing up? They'd say, no. But did you respect and love your dad? Yes. And that's where you want to get to, right? So be nosy, parents. Don't worry about being a friend. You know, be the parent. Raise your kids. Be nosy when they're online. There are threats out there, and they're targeting your kid. They're targeting all the kids.
Never mind the fact that daddy's a cop.
Yeah, that's right. Don't forget it.
As an extra measure of fear to that.
Okay. And they speak in emojis, parents. If you don't know what Instagram DMs are, you better find out. You better go look at those. That's where so much of the crazy stuff goes down from what we can estimate. And they actually have, we found on the Boiler Room podcast, we discovered that they have a whole language. It's almost like something, it's like a prison language or something almost, you know, like they speak in emoji codes that equal all these different, pills and drugs and experiences and stuff. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. So another pro tip for those parents out there, look that up, emoji codex, or I don't know what you look up, emoji code for drugs or emoji code for sex, you know, stuff you want to monitor. Because they speak in that stuff. And if you were to just glance at it, you know, swipe past it on the phone and say, oh, what's that? That's gobbledygook. It could be actually the message that's leading to a situation like Cece laid out, you know, who knows? I mean, that could have been all managed over emoji speak. I mean, they're very crafty. The young people, like, and as older people and people that are raising kids, we're dealing, you think about how sneaky we were when we were kids, you know, before there were digital devices, the stuff we used to get away with. And imagine having that set of tools when we were sneaky kids trying to get away with stuff with our parents, and having like the ability to have secret messages and another language and, you know, all of this stuff. Like, we've given the younger generation a set of tools that we literally have no idea what it's like to have in our hands as people experiencing youth and puberty and adolescence and young adulthood. You know what I mean? Like, that is a set of challenges that we deal with as grownups, you know, people in, you know, Gen X and up who didn't, you know, we grew up on bicycles and played with, you know, bouncing balls and jacks and blocks and Lincoln logs and stuff like that. Now kids they learn all kind of crazy stuff. I can't even imagine what it's like.
Well, I'm just thankful they didn't have cameras around when I was a teenager. And because two countries, because I lived near Canada at the time. So I wouldn't have fared well if they had cameras at the time. But you know what? If your parents aren't getting nosy about what they're videoing, you know, then I guess the cameras don't mean anything. So parents just got to be nosy and pushy. And like I said, you only get one chance to raise your kid, and you kind of want to try and do that the best you can.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
I agree more.
There you go. Well, we're getting down there, CC. Anything else you want to throw out there? We're getting into that final minute. I feel the music coming in about 24 seconds.
I'm going to keep digging. I'm going to watch the press conference with Sheriff-elect Luna. There's plenty of rumors going around about that situation and his transition team. And that there's going to be plenty of drama surrounding mm-hmm. that. So we'll have plenty to talk about next week. And also Newsom and how giant our deficit is about to be in California. We will be needing to talk about that next week because we are the fourth largest global economy who now is going to be, I don't know, billions in debt. I don't know.
It's all right.
Very sad situation, but we'll do our homework for next week.
Sounds good. We're going to pick on Pennsylvania AG Josh Shapiro next week also. Okay. Got a good one there. That'll be fun. And shout out to parade killer Daryl Brooks, who got 6 life sentences and 1,067 additional years in prison. Enjoy that, you psychopath. All right, Chief, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. And keep an eye on the impeachment of Krasner. Let's see if they follow through, get rid of that bomb.
All right. All right, excellent.
Well, I'm sure we'll be talking to you next week.